Coming up on the next Fan Up podcast, Viva the NFL in Mexico. The opposite of Viva to my fantasy game. We'll talk about that. And Viva Thursday Night Football. Or maybe not. We'll talk about that all coming up right now.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to this silent killer edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, it's Pod Vader. As you can hear, I have a little bit of a cold. The silent killer in the NFL. It's going to start striking, and it's really going to strike during the playoffs. So be careful. The flu, the silent killer of the NFL. I don't have the flu, just a cold, and you can hear it in my voice. Hey, I got a great show coming up for you today. I got a chance to rejoin with one of my good friends from the old place of employment, Kenneth Garay. He's part of the ESPN Deportes coverage of the NFL and a whole bunch of other sports. He's going to join us. We're going to talk about the NFL in Mexico and that whole experience that just happened. I've got Ramona Rice, the sports gal pal. She's coming on. She's part of the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League. It wasn't so much a good week for me, but she's going to talk a little bit more about her Philadelphia Eagles specifically and about their season so far. And then we're going to wrap it all up with a Thursday night football preview. It's the Dallas Cowboys traveling to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. And we've got a super fan battle for you to enjoy. So sit back, relax, enjoy the show. It is my great pleasure to introduce the world to a very good friend of mine. I used to work literally right across the window from this man every single day when I was at ESPN. His name is Kenny Garay. He is a sports commentator and play-by-play announcer for ESPN Deportes. Kenny, it's been too long.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? Great talking to you. Those are great years, and I hear you're doing great. And we all have the same passion, which is sports in general, although I don't share the same passion for a team that you have. I think you're still rooting for the Patriots, and I will be a Dolphin until the day I die.
Right. I know. Well, the Dolphins have been sneaky good this year, my friend.
The good thing about the Dolphins, besides whatever happens on the road and whether we make it to the playoffs or not, is that Adam Gase is kind of changing that losing culture that we have acquired the last few years. In other words, we got used to losing, and we were expecting to lose, and that's kind of turning around, which is a good thing. Hopefully we'll at least get a wild card this year. But I think we're in the right direction, and he's gotten the most out of Ryan Tannehill. When we all thought he was a lost cause, he's gotten the most out of him. We got a good offensive line. I think it all starts with Adam Gase. It was as expected. We thought it might not happen, but it is happening that he could try to replicate what he did with Jay Cutler in the Chicago Bears. Now he's doing it with Tannehill and the whole team in itself. So little by little, we're building, and that's good. I mean, the signs are good. I don't want to get too excited with the six games in a row. Now we have a game in Baltimore, but hopefully we'll continue in the right path.
So, unfortunately, timing was what it was, and we tried to schedule this to circle around the NFL's big Mexico trip, and you were there covering the game for ESPN Deportes. What was the atmosphere like there in Mexico City?
It was great. I think Mexico was due a game for a long time. The Mexican audience in general, you got to remember, Mexico has been following American football for more than 100 years. I mean, these guys in Mexico, they know the game. Some of the soccer stadiums, for instance, the stadium of Universidad Nacional Autónoma of Mexico, Pumas Obunam, which is a soccer stadium now or is used for soccer more than for any other sport, was inaugurated for a football game. This goes to tell you that there is a big knowledge of the game. Mexicans were kind of worried. I don't know if worried is the word, but they were kind of disappointed that for the past 11 years, remember there was that Sunday night 11 years ago in Mexico City that went very well, regular season game. But for the past 11 years, it was more London than Mexico. And they really wanted the NFL to come to Mexico. I think the atmosphere was great. And it was good for me to hear that the NFL was more of an evaluation process of London the past 11 years, because they knew Mexico was a good market and they could bring the NFL to Mexico. The atmosphere was great from beginning to end. And I think they passed the test. There were some things during the game that were not as planned. They used the glazer like they use in soccer games, which definitely would have to be banned. And they used that homophobic chant that they're trying to ban in soccer games as well. But other than that, the atmosphere was great. The people were great. The stadium was packed. Everybody was talking about it. In other words, it was an amazing atmosphere and a big day. And hopefully we'll come back with at least with a Monday night per year or a game per year in Mexico.
So you hit on a couple of the negative things. I do want to ultimately keep this positive, but I want to, since you're in the negative area, you know, I do that very well, Kenny. I go right to the negative. You know, I was reading an article and saw a quote from Eric Rinalda, who said that stadium and that place is quite possibly the worst place to ever play any sort of sporting event. The high altitude combined with the high amounts of pollution from Mexico City. You know, I saw a couple of players after the game mention that they had extreme difficulty breathing. You know, it is a higher altitude than it is even at Mile High. You think that has anything to do with any sorts of concerns with the player safety playing in Mexico City?
Well, it's been like that in soccer for many years, and Wijnaldum's right. And I'm a big fan of U.S. soccer, so I've followed Wijnaldum back when he played and in recent years, the national team and his commenting. But it is what it is. I mean, that's the regular habitat. That's the way that's where they live. That's the altitude they have to deal with. I think there's a concern as far as health. You got to remember, there is a few NFL players that don't play in Colorado. They don't play in Denver. They don't travel with the team, or maybe they do travel, but they don't play. They don't go to the through the high physical level that means playing in Colorado. So there is health concerns, but I don't think that's gonna change anything or is gonna stop the NFL from coming back to Mexico. I don't think that's gonna happen. I'm more concerned about the behavior of the people. It's not a soccer stadium. And listen, I grew up on soccer and I follow soccer and I do play-by-play of soccer. And to me, soccer is like a religion more than a sport. But all things considered, and having said that, the NFL is not going to put up with lasers and homophobic chants. It's a whole different audience. The only negative thing was that in Mexico, NFL fans used to brag about them being different than soccer fans and with better manners and all that. And at the end of the day, the same thing that happened in soccer stadiums happened on Monday night. And having said that, everything else went well. I think the laser, we have to work on trying to stop from getting those lasers into the stadium. And the chant, I honestly don't think they mean it, but they keep saying it, and that's going to offend a lot of people. I think it should go a different way, and they're going to have to behave. But other than that, everything was amazing, and I don't think, although there's concerns, I don't think that the altitude fact is not going to be a fact in the return or not of the game to Mexico in future years.
Now, I saw another quote from a Mexican businessman who noted that there are rich teams and poor teams in the NFL. And for the rich teams, it doesn't make any sense to take away one of their home games and play down in Mexico City. Dallas was a team that he mentioned that they would lose money in doing something like that. But for poor teams like Oakland, it makes perfect sense because they make a lot more money by playing the one game in Mexico than they do in Oakland. I already seen just released late on Tuesday, right before we started this interview, it looks like the Patriots in Oakland might be the two teams in Mexico City next year. And the NFL seems to be really gung-ho, and they should be, because the game sold out in 15 minutes, which I think is also interesting to note. And the total population in Mexico makes it the seventh largest fan base in the North America, which I think is absolutely crazy that the NFL hasn't made a bigger push for Mexico until now.
Yeah, that's what I think also. I mean, why haven't they gone to Mexico? And you got to remember, preseason games, they broke records with them in Mexico. They had a 114,000 when the Azteca had a bigger capacity. The Azteca Stadium had a bigger capacity when the Oilers played the Cowboys. So even before they brought regular season games, preseason did amazing in Mexican soil inside of Mexico in Mexico City. I think there's two things. What you say about the Raiders and the Patriots? You know how people jump on the wagon when teams are winning and they become their fans? That happened with many people that watched the Dolphins in the 70s. Well, it's happening in Mexico as well with the Patriots. We spoke to a few people while we were there. And you know, traditionally, Mexican fans had been either Steelers or Cowboys because most of this fan base grew up in the 70s. With that big rivalry between the Steelers and the Cowboys. So the vast majority are Steelers and Cowboys. Nowadays, there's many Patriots of the newer generation because they saw Belichick and Brady win it year after year. So now there's a lot of Patriots, just like there's a few Dolphins and there's a lot of 49ers as well because they lived through the Montana era. So I think the Raiders, they have a good fan base as well, and the Patriots will be a good choice for the NFL and the next game in Mexico. The Cowboys might lose money, I agree. And it's better for the poor teams than for the rich teams. But the Cowboys will bring so many people, and it will be so crowded, and people will nearly push each other or do whatever they have to do to get a ticket or just get a piece of the action or get to the NFL experience in Mexico. That is going to be crazy. I think any time the Cowboys and the Steelers go there, it's going to be amazing. I mean, these two teams, the Houston Texans and the Raiders did good, and the Monday night I think will always sell out, or any NFL games will always sell out. But especially if the Cowboys and the Steelers come because of their fan base and their history, it's going to be even crazier.
You know, the other thing we were talking about our families before we started, and you know, my son and I have been involved in NFL flag football for quite some time, and it's interesting to see that the growth of the sport with the youth in Mexico. I see that flag football teams, over 6,500 teams now in Mexico, flag football teams compared to 120 only 8 years ago. That's tremendous growth in the youth sector.
Yes. Well, nowadays, Jay, and I know you're, besides your great broadcasting and everything, you're building up your career in coaching. We might have the next Belichick here. No, I honestly, the culture nowadays, besides the people, the older generation that started rooting for American football teams and started getting into American football, the newer generation has even more ways. You know how the world has globalized, and now you get into the internet, you get bombarded with information from everywhere. The cable system, you pay any basic cable system in Mexico and you watch ESPN, you watch Fox, you watch all those American channels that broadcast the game. So now kids, because of the way the world is evolving, now they could feel the NFL as though it's a local team, just like what happens in soccer with Real Madrid and Barcelona. You got to remember, nowadays, anywhere, you could be a Real Madrid fan, and you could actually live the day-to-day nearly as good and feel as close to the team as anybody who lives in Madrid. The same happens in football. So that's why flag football and football for youth and for children has gotten big. Even when the Houston Texans, you might remember this, when they got to Mexico and they were on the bus toward going on their way to the hotel, they said one of the things that struck them was that they saw kids playing flag football on a little field, which, you know, they were expecting to see a lot of kids playing soccer. So is that diverse the sports itself has grown that big that now kids are also playing flag football out on the streets or on little fields everywhere in Mexico.
There's no one else that I think could answer this question better than you, Kenny. How about the NFL moving even further south down into your neck of the woods in South America?
I think we're a long way from that. I mean, they could have a couple of games, maybe exhibition games, maybe I think it's going to take time. It's gotten bigger, that's for sure. And there's a lot of amateur leagues in Ecuador, in Colombia. There's a league in Chile. We're talking very amateur leagues. I mean, we're not talking professional leagues or semi-professional. But it's gotten bigger, and people have gotten to know the game, and they're knowledgeable. I mean, if you talk to them, when I call games for Latin America, college games or NFL games, they interact with you and they know the game and they know who's injured and you know they know all the X's and O's of the game. But besides that, to bring the National Football League to a place like Colombia, to a place like Uruguay, Argentina, I think we're a long way. I think we're a long way from that. I think the security concerns might be bigger, even though Mexico has also security concerns, but it's next door. The commute, the transportation, the flight time is shorter, is easier. It's very different, though. I mean, going next door to Mexico or going to Canada, even going to London, which is a longer trip, is more viable and more doable. I think for now it's going to stay in Mexico. I don't think it's a good idea to speed it up that much. Maybe not in the near future, but in the long run, maybe start having some games on other places like Buenos Aires, Argentina. But that's going to be down the road. For now, I think they need to make sure they consolidate this Mexico thing and maybe go to Mexico once a year and create a tradition or put it as part of the NFL calendar. At least a game or maybe two or three in Mexico every year. It's not only Mexico City, Jay. Monterrey has a long tradition of American football, and they have a great stadium that the local team Monterrey just built, an amazing stadium that could be used by the NFL. So I think before going elsewhere to other countries, they would have to, it's a better idea to spread it out in Mexico in different cities other than Mexico City.
Awesome. Kenny, if people are interested in listening to you or want to check you out, where can people find you?
They could find me on Twitter. Well, they could also download the application, ESPN Deportes Radio. We do a morning show from 6 to 9 every day for the whole nation called Feed My ESPN. And then Sports Center updates on TV and the whole nine yards and Monday Night Football and soccer. And we also do basketball, the NBA. You could also find me at Kenneth_Garay, G-A-R-A-Y. And Jay, it's been a pleasure. I'll be more than happy to be here anytime you need me. And I'm glad you're doing well, and we miss you. So God bless you. And you know you have a friend here, and also it's always great to sit down and talk football with you. And nothing, go Dolphins, and hopefully next time we talk.
No, don't go Dolphins. Don't go Dolphins. Squish the fish.
Next time we talk, I'm gonna be excited and celebrating an amazing season by my team, because remember, whatever brought us here was the love for a team at the beginning. So you know everything else went after. It was like a domino effect. But at the beginning, we were all fans of a team.
That's right. Kenny, I miss our Monday. I miss our morning chats. But, you know, life goes on. But we will definitely have to catch up with you again.
You decided to make money. That's good. Don't forget us, the poor.
All right, Kenny. I love you, man. Have a good one.
I love you, brother. God bless you. Many blessings to you and yours. Cheers.
Normally I say it's my pleasure to bring in these guests. This week, it's still my pleasure to be talking with this particular person. It's a displeasure under the circumstances of which we are discussing anything at this particular point. I'm talking about Ramona Rice. She is the sports gal pal. And Ramona, the defending champion of the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Expert League, will be relinquishing her crown this year, but she couldn't go down without swinging. She took me out this past week, and now my fantasy playoffs begin 1 week early. Hello, Ramona. Thanks so much for making my fantasy life that much more difficult.
Oh, there's so many ways I could answer that, Pod Vader. I'm just going to say you're welcome.
Yeah, so your team sits at a solid 4-8. My team sits at a solid, well, it's not really solid, 6-4-2. I now have to beat Matt Chatham again, although I didn't beat him the first time. I tied him the first time to get into the playoffs. If I the winner of this game will be the fourth seed in the upcoming playoffs, depending on how some of the other games go. But essentially, this is the game for the playoffs. This was not how I foresee that. This is not how I foresaw this going down about 3 weeks ago when I said, oh, yeah, I pretty much have a playoff spot locked up.
See, that's your problem. You do this every year. You say it even in your head, and then you cause the bad juju. You did this last year with me, and I managed to win the whole thing. So this happens every year you do this, Pod Vader. You do it to yourself.
Well, listen, I'm not jaded enough to believe that I can actually win this whole thing this year, because it's clearly the Williams sisters of her fantasy football that are going to run away with this league. Although, finally get knocked off, so
I'm okay with them winning. Like, I think this league should be only females win this league. I'm okay with that.
That would be an interesting quirk to the Fantasy Expert League that we have here at Blog Talk Radio, that only women win it. Which would lead me to believe I need more fantasy football shows featuring women hosts. I'm writing that note down right now.
You kind of have the mark on that, though. I mean, you're very accommodating to us ladies over there at the Blog Talk, which is lovely. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying. You know, the other reason why I'm a little upset with talking with you today is because your Eagles couldn't get it done against the Green Bay Packers. What in the world? Ramona, what's going on there in Philadelphia?
I'm going to preface this by saying this year has been so much better than last season. We're going to be thankful, since we just celebrated Thanksgiving. We're going to be thankful that we are free of Chip Kelly and his nonsense. And that what I'm looking at is that this year I wasn't expecting anything anyway. So it happens. It's interesting. It's our first home loss. All of our other losses have come on the road. And that should be actually... I'm not sure people are so surprised about it, just because you have a rookie quarterback and you technically have a rookie head coach, even though he has a lot of play calling experience. It's just the way it goes. It's the way they lose that's frustrating for me and other Eagles fans, is that fourth quarter, very conservative play calling that we remember so well with Andy Reid. And surprise, we get it again. So it's going to be interesting to see how they develop and what they do in the offseason to kind of counterbalance some of the things, like, I don't know, getting wide receivers that catch balls. That would be really great. I would really enjoy that very much.
I mean, you've gone on a fairly predictable pattern after starting the season off 3-0. Two losses, a win, two losses, a win. So we should have foreseen that this was going to be a loss. Now you have the Bengals, the hopeless Bengals coming to town, or actually you're going to their town.
Yeah, so
it should be a W for you.
It should be, but I wouldn't count on it. So don't, you know, in your pick-ems, like, really, that's kind of a toss-up. That's one of those hard ones, because both teams are just so, like, miserable. Like, they're not playing really super terribly bad, but they're not playing good enough to be good. So you're like, what do I do? So, and I think a lot of teams this year are doing that.
But the Packers were the same way. The Packers were ripe for the picking. What happened?
I don't know. Maybe Aaron Rodgers got some really good turkey and just figured it out. I mean, you know, they just figured it out and they just scored more points and were played better. And Philadelphia, unfortunately, did itself. You know, I look at it as we have a very weak secondary. That's a problem. We have, you know, an O-line that isn't giving our running backs room to grow. And while we've got an excellent quarterback, and I'm very pleased with Winston, what he's done this year, and I see great future hope for him, I'm really hoping that we take the offseason and build around him so that he can have just the weapons he needs to kind of succeed. And also, it doesn't help in our division. Last year was miserable. This year, like, you know, we've got, 9-1 Dallas Cowboys. It's ridiculous, and they're obnoxious, and I hate them.
They're actually 10-1.
Oh, even worse. Even worse. See, I'm just trying to block it out. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't see the Cowboys doing this well, but I did, you know, at the beginning of the season, predict that the Cowboys would go from worst to first and the Eagles would remain on the bottom of the cellar there. I don't think you could have expected as good of a, honestly, I don't think you could have expected this good of a season out of the Eagles.
No, I did not. So that's what I'm saying. I'm thankful. Because again, we had so much quarterback controversy in the beginning when Bradford suddenly, you know, jumped ship. And then we got this new guy that I was freaking out in, you know, April when they traded all that stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're doing this again. We're trading everything to get this one dude. Like, I hope he works out because we've done this before and it didn't work out. So far, it's working out. I like him a lot. I think he's steady. I think that as he grows and as he gets older and more mature and has, you know, just more experience, I think he's going to be very good. And again, it's all about, you know, it concerns me when Darren Sproles is one of our best leading rushers. I love him, but really it should be like Ryan Matthews if you think about it. And that's a little frustrating. So I'm hoping that, again, they give him a young running back that they can really utilize. Philadelphia's known for great running backs. And then again, wide receivers that don't drop balls. I'm talking to you, Aguilar. I'm talking to you.
How fortunate is it that Jeff Fisher and the LA Rams obviously went in a different direction and the Cleveland Browns didn't think Carson Wentz was worth their time?
I think our lucky stars, and I was really questioning our coaching and our general managers last year when they did this. I was like, that's it. I'm done. I was just tuning out. And you know, we got very lucky again. I mean, and we saw that immediately, like he started just playing really well. I think his best performance, me personally, was against the Bears week 2. He just was so put together. And then also when we beat Pittsburgh, I mean, so that's why it was frustrating. And the way we lost to Detroit and Washington at just the last minute, and even Dallas at the last minute, you're just frustrated because just a couple of in New York, like almost all of our losses were like kind of last minute glitches. The last two, Seattle and then Green Bay, those were just us not playing well. But the other ones, if you look at it, it's just one or two different plays differently. And I equate that to, again, yeah, new coach and new quarterbacks. So I think next year, watch out. I think the Eagles are going to do very well.
So you've traded all of this stuff away. How do you expect to build the weapons around Carson Wentz next year?
Hope and a prayer. I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, you know, it's just, yeah, we don't really have a lot of cap room. We got some contract issues we got to deal with. But, you know, it takes time and patience. And I hopefully, you know, not that Philadelphia fans are ever so patient, but it's been a while. So I'm hoping that we can just be calm and believe in the system and not make any rash decisions. You know, there were people, I remember last year, when I came on your show and we were talking about when Chip Kelly was out and people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you guys fired him. I'm like, no, we needed to. Like, it was just a toxic situation. This is different. This is rebuilding. Rebuilding takes 2 to 4 seasons to really get it going. And we just have to be patient.
Well, Chip Kelly was only there for 2 seasons.
And look at all the havoc he caused. Again, he should not be. I mean, look at what he's made, like the San Francisco even worse than they possibly could be.
No, he's rebuilding. Possible. It's only season one.
Ugh, no. Chip Kelly, please go back to college. Please go back to the Pac-12 and do your nonsense there, because Oregon's going to be looking for a new coach this year.
They will be. And I think that's probably going to be best for him to do so. I just think when you reach this level of, this level in your career of being a head coach in the NFL, it's hard to admit that you need to sort of take that step back. Plus,
well, Nick Saban being a head coach
being a head coach at the college level, I think is a lot more difficult than being a head coach at the pro level.
I think there's two different, and I really truly believe this. There are only two coaches that I can think of that have done very well, both pro and college level, Jimmy Johnson and then Pete Carroll. That's it. The other ones, you either are a mentality of a college coach where you are basically like the dictator and you get to set everything. And I think that's the way Chip Kelly is. Or you're more like, you know, I'm losing breath here with there's not that many pro coaches that try to go college. I mean, because it's a different mentality, because in that aspect, you're not a babysitter. You're not a dictator. You're dealing with grown men who have bigger egos and who, you know, need you more than you need that. It's an odd thing. So I think you have to have the right mindset for that. Chip Kelly doesn't have the right mindset to be an NFL coach. I'm going to say it. I've said it from the beginning. I never liked him. I think that he does very well in college for a reason, because then in the college program, you can be quirky and weird and do experiments because you get a whole new set of guys every year. Like, literally teams, you know, flip over every year because of graduation and other issues. So you don't get that in the NFL. So I'm just saying, if I were Chip Kelly, I would consider going back to Oregon.
By the way, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are screaming at their podcasts right now going, there's more than 2 successful college/pro coaches. But I would also
be on Twitter, and it's at SportsGalPal. You tell me which ones, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
There you go. And I would like to add that Pete Carroll cheated to get the job done. And since people like to throw stones at me, I get to throw them back.
Sure.
So there you go. Awesome. So you just gave your Twitter. I noticed that you had a new podcast out, The Sports Gal Pal, with Corey Finneran.
Yes, we talked about the Cubs winning. Yeah, and I want to be really clear. Blog Talk and Pod Vader particularly have been very kind to me. It's been a little tricky getting back into sports fandom with, you know, the significant event that happened to me this year. And so they've been very kind and have not pressured me to go, hi, when are episodes coming out? And it's just one of those things, guys, where as a story really hits me, like the Cubs and their fandom, and Corey is the perfect guy to talk about what it really means for them to win that championship. And then we'll start doing some more episodes soon, but it's just sometimes I'll be honest, Pod. The reason why I haven't done well in any of my fantasy football leagues this year, I've done well in any of my pick'em leagues, and I didn't realize how much I needed my husband to talk to about some of these decisions. So it's a new adjustment, but you know, we're getting through it. So yeah.
Well, trust me, I'm also adjusting to my horrible picks and my horrible fantasy life.
That's every year.
It happens at the same time. And all these, I was doing so well in the Rob Has a Podcast League, and now I'm dropping off in that one. I'm still in the playoffs in that one, so I still have hope. But man, my teams are just stinking all of a sudden.
See, this is the time of year that you either want to be like me, totally out of it, so you don't have to worry about it really anymore. I mean, you set your lineups, you should still set your lineups and try to play and try to win, because you can, again, screw people like Pod Vader. That's kind of enjoyable. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of nice to be relaxed going, okay, after a certain number of weeks, it's done and I don't have to worry about it right now. So I can focus on more fun things like college basketball.
Well, there you go. She is the sports gal pal. That's Ramona Rice. Ramona, thanks for joining us on the next Fan Up podcast, and I'm sure we'll talk again somewhere down the road.
Thanks, Pod Vader.
Welcome to the Minnesota Vikings Dallas Cowboys Superfan Battle. I am your giant superfan representing the Minnesota Vikings today for Davey. And with me on the other line is Kevin, our Cowboy super fan. How are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing well tonight, Sam. I'm taking a little break from Madden here, but always time to talk. Good time to talk about the Cowboys.
Yeah, and we'll be doing this next week because the Giants actually play the Cowboys. But how are you feeling going into this Minnesota Vikings game? They were hot at the beginning of the season with a really good defense. What do you see from them? What do you see you guys doing on offense?
I mean, I've never really bought into the Vikings at all this year, even before Bradford got injured. And I mean, that's another topic for a different day, Teddy Bridgewater. But I never thought I never bought into them preseason. And so what I'm looking for this game, Thursday, back-to-back Thursdays now for the Cowboys and the Vikings, actually, really, it's going to be a battle of two strengths, and that's the Cowboys' offensive line versus the Vikings' defensive line. And the Vikings' defensive line is only second in the NFL to the Seahawks with sacks coming from their front four. They have 24.5 sacks with their front four. They have the ability to cause problems for the Cowboys' offensive line. I mean, in my opinion, the Cowboys are better run blocking than pass protecting, so they can certainly give us some problems there. If we don't really have that much time to throw the ball, and I'm not saying that we're not going to, I think the Cowboys will hold up for the most part. But if the Vikings can get after Dak, their secondary is one of the best in the league. When throwing down the field 20 yards plus, the Vikings are ranked first in the National Football League allowing only around 25% completion, which is a ridiculous number. And I believe the opposing quarterback's rating on those same throws is around 27 or 28, which is also a ridiculous number. So I don't expect Dez Bryant to have, like, a really big game. I mean, and the Cowboys have proven that Dak and Dez don't necessarily need to connect for 75-plus yards for the Cowboys to win. And especially with Xavier Rhodes, who I'm assuming is going to be shadowing him most of the game, I think Dez is going to be taken away for the majority of the game. So that brings us, which I probably should have started out with in the beginning, to Ezekiel Elliott and his ability to run the ball on this Minnesota line, who, although is pretty stout, is roughly middle of the road defensively against the run. But I think they're better than the stats give them credit for. How do you see the Vikings, or how do you think the Vikings may attack the Cowboys this Thursday?
Honestly, I don't see the Vikings doing much. I mean, I watched their Thanksgiving game, and Sam Bradford has an aversion to throwing the ball 10 yards down the field. And, you know, this is a Cowboys defense that, for all their faults and all their lack of skill, seems to be able to tackle well, from what I've seen. So as long as they keep everything in front of them and, like, don't give up those big plays to Cordarrelle Patterson or any of these other guys, I don't see the Vikings getting more than 17 points. Stephon Diggs is limited in practice. Bradford is limited as a quarterback. Kyle Rudolph is okay, but, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's keeping you up at night, that he's going to tear apart your whole defense. I think the Cowboys defense for their talent has overachieved. I don't know if you would agree, but that's what it seems like. Last week, obviously, they gave up a ton of yards, but I think Washington's one of the best offenses in the league. And I think the Vikings, it's going to have to come from the defense. If they want to win this game, they're going to need it to be the game that Dak just – it's his first really bad game, I think, is the only way the Vikings win this, where, you know, he may throw a pick six, have a fumble. They give up a special teams touchdown. Are you worried that game for Dak is coming anytime soon? Or are we thinking
To be honest, I've been worried that game has been coming. Against Baltimore, I thought it might have came. Against Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh, I thought it was going to come. In Green Bay, in Lambeau Field, I thought it might come, but it just hasn't come. And I'm just gonna stop trying to say it's going to come. At this point, if it happens, it happens. But I'm not expecting him to hit the rookie wall, so to speak. I mean, there's just only so many weeks you can predict him to hit the rookie wall, and then he exceeds expectations again for now the 11th consecutive week. So with that said, I'm going to give one last shout out to Romo. You're still, I always think you should be the Cowboys starter. But anyway, but unlike you, I think the Vikings do have a sort of decent chance at moving the ball against the Cowboys. I mean, I know I did watch the Thanksgiving game against the Lions for a bit, and Bradford, you're right, completely averse to throwing the ball 10, 15 yards down the field. I believe he completed 31 passes for just above 200 yards, which is, I mean, it's just crazy numbers. He completed 80% of his passes, 30 completions, and he threw for 200 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. I don't even know how that's possible, but that's Bradford and the Vikings for you. But with that said, Jordan Reed just torched the Cowboys. Granted, Jordan Reed and Kyle Rudolph are different players, Kirk Cousins is, and the Redskins have this infinitely better offense than the Vikings and Bradford. But Kyle Rudolph can give us problems. We've seen numerous receivers give the Cowboys problems this year, although not many have gone over 100 yards. Now, we do get Barry Church back this week. I don't know really how much that's going to help, because we just don't have a pass rush. And I know the Vikings offensive line is one of the worst, if not the worst, unit in the league. The Cowboys, regardless of who we play, just can never find a pass rush. And I don't think that they will this entire year. Without getting turnovers, without pressure, I mean, even the worst offense can look good under those circumstances. So I do think the Vikings do have a pretty decent shot at putting up 20-plus points. Not to mention they're at home, but I just want to get some X factors for the Vikings.
I think if they want to win, it's going to have to be those linebackers, Michael Kendricks and Anthony Barr. I think they're going to be instrumental in both stopping those long runs from developing and also getting some pressure on Tony Romo. Michael Kendricks is probably going to draw some Cole Beasley assignments in the slot. Again, I think Minnesota is going to have to play their best game. And I think those two guys specifically are going to have to be close to transcendent on Sunday for them really to have a chance, because if they're not making plays in the second level, I think Ezekiel Elliott's going to have a big day. The Vikings defense has slowed down a little bit since the beginning of the season. Who do you see as the Dallas X factor for this game?
I mean, I hate to say Barry Church, because he's a pretty well-known player, but he's coming off an injury, missed the last four games. before he got hurt, he led our team with two interceptions, which is half of our team total. I'm not necessarily calling that he's gonna have an interception, but if you follow the Cowboys, Barry Church is one of the leaders of that defense. So I think just his presence alone will pick up the intensity and the just the passion on the defensive side of the ball. Not to say that they haven't been giving it. I just think his presence will just positively impact the other 10 players on the field. So my prediction for the game is 26-16 Cowboys. What about you, Sam?
I think 24-10 Cowboys. I don't think the Vikings get many possessions, and I don't think they do much with those possessions they do get. I hope you guys get a win this week, because next week it's going to be a totally different story, and we'll have more for you guys next week.
I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to next week. Hopefully, not a trap game, but hopefully we can just scooch by here and get a mini bye and prepare for your Giants.
We're gonna be 8-4. What are we? 7-7. We're 8-4 now. You know, we're 8-3. Like worst case scenario, we're 8-4. I don't think that's a trap game. That's a little.
I mean, not you. I'm talking about the Vikings this week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hear that. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
So there are our super fans, Kevin for the Cowboys, Sam, our Giants super fan, filling in for Davey, our Vikings super fan. Unfortunately, Davey wasn't able to sort of stand up for his team, but I do agree with basically what Sam and Kevin said there. It's going to be a close one. I think ultimately this one goes to the Cowboys. Normally, I'd say on a short week, you go with the home team, but it's not a short week for either teams. Both teams played exactly a week ago on Thanksgiving, so there's no advantage to either team here in this particular game, and thus I think the real advantage goes to the Cowboys, who are really fighting for that top spot in the power rankings over my Patriots. It's really between the two. What I do think is interesting is neither team, the Patriots nor the Cowboys, seem to be having much success with a pass rush and turnovers this year. I think that might be something that could come back to bite both teams come playoff time. I mentioned during the open of the show about the death of Thursday night football, or at least I alluded to it slightly. That's what I meant to do. If you didn't get it, sorry. But yes, there's some talk that next year might be the last year of Thursday night football, which would be fantastic, honestly, because the football on Thursday nights has been horrific. And the NFL's worried about their slumping ratings. I think that might have something to do with it. You give the people too much of what they want, and they get really bad football, they're not going to watch it anymore. And I think Thursday night has just been a bad night for football overall. Leaving football on Sunday and Monday is just perfect. There's no need to change it. And I think giving people a better quality product on those 2 days is in the NFL's best interest. And especially if they're going to start shipping the game off to Mexico, Toronto, Vancouver, England, talk of trying to play a game in China. If they're going to try and start doing these types of things, they need to strengthen the game. And by playing games on Thursdays, giving the players less chance to rest up, less chance to heal up, we've seen it. Thursday night football has just been a bad product, and we don't want it anymore. So there you go. We want to hear from you. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, check out all of our written stuff. All the super fans write up their previews. We make them available on our website, www.nextfanup.wordpress.com. And of course, you can always catch us on Facebook as well. That's still there. Facebook.com/NFU podcast. Many ways to get in touch with us. Many ways to hear from us. We got another show coming at you tomorrow. It'll be the Sunday previews. Hope you enjoy it. Till then, here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.